So the abstinence requirement does not apply. Anyone, regardless of your abstinence, may ask questions and participate in that way. And we will be timed. And also, this is being recorded. And I want everyone to understand that. So if there's a problem when you speak, I don't know. It's up to you. But it is being recorded. So anyway, with that, I'd like to get moving here. I would like someone, please, just to get us into an alignment that this is a CEA HOW workshop, would someone please read the 12 steps? And Shannon, can you unmute for a moment so someone can participate and read the 12 steps for us? They have that available. Hello, hello? Well, maybe I'll just read the 12 steps and get that going. So
I can read the 12 steps.
Please. And who's this?
This is Susan, compulsive eater.
Hi, Susan.
Hi. The 12 steps. Okay. One, we admitted we were powerless over food. It had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to compulsive eaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Thank you so much. And would someone please read the HOW concept?
Hi, my name is Marsha. I'm a compulsive overeater. I'd like to do that, please.
Thank you.
The C HOW concept. The Compulsive Eaters Anonymous HOW concept has been formed to offer the compulsive eater who accepts the 12 steps and 12 traditions as a program of recovery, a disciplined and structured approach. The See How groups have been formed in the belief that our disease is absolute, and therefore only absolute acceptance of the See How concept will offer any sustained abstinence to those of us whose compulsion has reached a critical level. Therefore, the See How plan of eating, steps, traditions, and tools of recovery are not suggested. Rather, we accept them as requirements for our recovery. Meetings are dedicated to the concept of remaining honest, open-minded, and willing to listen. This is the how of the program. We pray that the collective group conscience and love that these ideals offer us will promote a strong sense of security that will enable us to experience a new unity and wholeness with all those around us, and that the See How ideal will help us to progress in our program of recovery on a daily basis. To be certain, much of our strength is found in the structure of meetings and the daily adherence to the program as it is written in our literature. Each group also firmly understands that after our recovery has begun through abstinence and the taking of the first three steps, our further surrender to the additional steps of recovery offers us a promise of happiness, contentment, and achievement in all areas of our lives. We ensure our continued and sustained abstinence from compulsive eating by being forever aware that God is doing for us what we have never been able to do for ourselves. May God, as each of us understands him, open our minds and our hearts to the love which is manifest in this room. Amen. Thank you for letting me read.
Oh, thank you. And, you know, it's like participating in your own recovery. Boy, it's the greatest thing. Thank you so much. And, you know, anyone can read any of the readings except for the seven tools. You know, even a guest can read that. So for us to, you know, have the courage, a newcomer, and stand up and take one of the readings, it's a way of participating even before we have abstinence. I just want to let everybody know that. Okay. I just want to welcome again. This is the World Service Business Conference Sponsorship Committee's workshop that we're putting on, and I want to thank the PhoneBridge people, you know, for allowing us this time, and Lucille for arranging this and making sure, you know, we're not interfering with other meetings, and everyone has the benefit of this. And again, our speakers for today is are going to be myself, Lois, and Mary, Jim, Roberta, and Shannon. And I'm going to start here with the first part. And first of all, this is part one, and where I'm going to suggest how you out there can create sponsorship workshops in your own area. Now, the format is going to be online, and also the contact list, if you want to call any of us. Shannon has that available, and so she'll be, you know, she'll make her email address available or phone numbers or whatever, and you can get in contact with people. I will not be able to stay online afterwards. I have to get scooting right at 11:30, but I will be available anytime after, and people have called me from the other workshops, and it's always a delight to get the feedback and answer any questions. You know, I know I'm always available, and same with the speakers, the panel people. And just to qualify, last Saturday on the 23rd of January, I commemorated 20 years of HAL abstinence. I came in on January, actually 22nd, 1990, and I call my first real day the next day when I called my sponsor with my food written down, called in, committed. And I got into service right away, and I'll tell you, for me, that's been a key. And also weighing and measuring, that old first day, very humble action that we all take, and I still do the same thing I did my first day: read, write, call my sponsor, and do service. I'm not good at those outreach calls, but I do it anyway. And part of, and the service that I've really enjoyed most, and I seem to have a propensity for, I'm not a technical person, so there's other people with talents in that, but I'm pretty good at putting on workshops. And how we do workshops here in the San Fernando Valley, and it's a suburb, if anyone doesn't know, just north of the city of Los Angeles, the downtown L.A., about 15 miles north, where Universal Studios are. So just to give you a little geography lesson. We have a really great going inner group here. We're very active, and we're graced with 40 meetings, a meeting of the week, and lots of times three times a day. So face-to-face meetings, we're very, very fortunate here, and I'll tell you every day I thank God for that. And a lot of really good participating people, and we get at least 10 people on maintenance that stand up at every meeting, so it's just dynamic here. How I put on a workshop? Well, there's another gal I work with. Her name is Leona, and she is the champion of all times of getting a location. That's the first thing the first thing you want to do is pick a theme. And sponsorship, you can't do enough of that. I do that at least once a year, if not twice, because I know what I've found in being on the World Service Board of Directors is that it's like that old telephone game. You know, we try to pass this on to the best of our abilities because we're all sponsored with the same information, and we are human beings, and it takes on our personalities. And if you don't have the benefit of face-to-face meetings and that kind of stuff, although I know the PhoneBridge meeting has fabulous participation and abstinence. I do sponsor people on PhoneBridge primarily, and it's very impressive and inspiring. Lots of times the message can get diluted or altered. And so what I have found, if we all keep going back, including myself, and reading our literature, our sponsor's guide, the Blue Book, the sponsor's guidelines has just about everything you want to know in it. And I always use the big book and the 12 and 12 as anything when I write for my reference, when I write a workshop. I never invent anything of my own. I always use our conference-approved literature. That's all, folks, because you don't want to know how Lois does things. Lois, I had my head in the toilet with bulimia for 13 years. You don't want to do what I do, not the gospel by Lois. You want CEA HAL as it's written, to the best I can transfer it to you. So with Leona's help, we pick a theme. So we're going to just, for we'll do sponsorship workshop, and then we will, she'll find a location. And good locations, generally speaking, that we've had great success with are hospital community rooms, and we have a Kaiser Hospital here, and they have big auditoriums that are available to us, and we book it with their people. Leona gets in there with their booking person and on the calendar and finds out a day and basically set it about at least 2 months in advance to give people enough time to spread the message and, get on the books, get on their calendar. And so we have our theme, we have our location, and we have our date. That's the first three things you need to have, to have a workshop. And like they say in AA, the way this fellowship grows is with a coffee pot and a resentment. People take off and they start their own meetings. Well, in a sense, that's sort of what it is with workshops. You just pick a date, a theme, and a location. So libraries are also a good place. Leona has had great success with our local libraries, have community rooms. They're free of charge to nonprofits like ourselves, and we have that nonprofit status number from our state, and so we have that. Churches are always really pretty good for, and usually a Saturday I have found as being the best workshop day, just for our location. I don't know about anybody else. We've tried Sundays, the beauticians, and some people of various religions where they observe their Sabbath on Saturdays have made the request to have it on other days. We've tried Sunday, and it has not afternoon, because after usually the meetings, we have morning meetings, has not been as successful. So I'm just putting it out there. We've had the most success on a Saturday. And our workshops usually go for 3 hours. We'll do from like 1:30 to 4:30. You can have them for an hour and a half. Anything that works for you. There's no hard set rules here. I'm just giving you what's worked for us in the past. And we get a flyer made. And the flyer, of course, has the theme, the date, and the location. And also what we tend to do is create this to be a fundraiser as well, to help fund our inner group and also to send monies over to Area 1 to help fund delegates. And we'll put a charge on it. Now, this is a suggested donation. I want to be very clear about that. Nobody is ever, ever, ever turned away from a workshop who can't afford it or doesn't choose to for whatever reason. It's just a suggested donation, and we put it anywhere from $5 to $10. No one is ever turned away. And so we get that. Okay, next thing is we get our service people. We start aligning people to help us. So we get someone for registration, and they will take the little cash box, and we start off with a kitty, of money just to be able to make change, and ones and a five and a ten. And also what we do is we have raffles. I'll tell you, people love games of chance, and we usually give them one raffle ticket just for coming, for price of admission. And also we'll do a 50-50, and we'll raffle off usually one of our conference-approved literature books, a big book or a 12 and 12 or just something. As-Bill sees it, that's always popular because to get people into the As-Bill sees it questions. So that's always fun, and people love games of chance. And don't do the drawing, okay? Just do the drawing at the very end because it'll keep people in the room. If they have the, they want to bolt or they have to leave, keep them in the room, do the drawing at the very end, and it's just a lot of fun because, we all like that. So anyway, and that's usually what the registration person will do, and so we got them all set up with a table when people come in for that. And a coffee person, it's always nice to have beverages served, decaf, regular, bottled water. Other than that, I don't do a whole lot, and tea. Don't do a whole lot more if people want to bring in their own sodas or whatever. That's their business. Try to keep the food out of it, not to have any of that. Although we do have lunchtime meetings, but people don't usually take the liberty and bring their food in. I just hope they don't. Anyway, so we do that. We have that all set up. And then you get your panel or who you want to do the workshop. And we've had it where it's just one person doing the entire workshop, or maybe we'll be on inventory, and so it's particularly dynamic in that, and so we'll ask them, and then usually they end up making handouts, so there'll be some kind of handout or a guide or an agenda to follow. And also make sure you have extra pens and paper. People like to take notes, and that's pretty much it, just to get it started. And of course, these are just the framework. You add anything you like with your own groups. So we put that together, and we put our put on a you know, it's like putting on a party for me. I know I get nervous and all that, and you start to see people gather, and it's just so exciting. And we have our panel people, you know, they all gather, and they speak for about 15, 20 minutes each. It just depends on the length of the workshop and what we're doing. So if I'm the moderator, I start off, just like we did here, welcome everyone, acknowledgments, gratitude, start off with a serenity prayer. And I always do a little housekeeping. I like to tell people where the bathrooms are and that we're all adults and they need to get up and walk around and do what they have to. They please go do it. We're not kids in school here, and take care of yourself. And, you know, shut off your cell phones like that, you know, be polite. And, again, serenity prayer, and I like to ground what I call grounding or aligning the workshop with a little bit of some how readings, whatever's pertinent, like we did the steps and the how concept, just to make sure we're all on the same page and we understand we made it to the right room. And sometimes you'll see someone in a library situation go, oops, this is the wrong room, and they get up and run out. So, you know, just to make sure everybody knows where they're at and what we're all about that day. And, you know, and introduce the first speaker. Also, it's good to have like a chalkboard or the, you know, those white boards with the markers. Or if you're really technical, you can get a PowerPoint presentation. You know, whatever the speakers have set up, it's great. I personally, when I do a workshop, I love group participation. I like to have some talking. Then I have a written exercise, get people into really sitting there quietly answering a question or writing, and then sharing their writing. Also, it's always good to have some meditation or prayer as we do in our 12-step room, just to get people quiet and aligned. You know, and if we're doing a workshop on prayer and meditation, obviously that will be what's going on. And the panel people, the ones I've chosen, are usually just stellar, you know, real heavy hitters in the prayer and meditation. And a lot of people, newcomers and folks in program, don't know how to get to that. Because we are a spiritual program of recovery, and finding that higher power and aligning with them, that's always a good theme for a workshop. It's that question always comes up. How do you get that? You know, and people who are having trouble struggling generally will notice that the people who have abstinence are no longer on a diet. They truly have made this CEA hell a lifestyle, and they have that spiritual angle going for them. So, you know, you want to get those heavy hitters in there who can impart their experience, strength, and hope. That's what we're after. And, boy, it just makes such a difference in people's lives. I get feedback afterwards. It could be just a one-liner, just something that you say, and it will stick with a person, and it may make all the difference in the world in that more academic setting of a workshop, and yet different than a meeting where it's more open and we're having an exchange and you can talk, and the absence requirement doesn't apply. This is not a meeting. People can pitch and ask questions and participate, and that too becomes a welcome, like breath of fresh air for people, because we're the ones that are struggling with their abstinence. They can never speak in a meeting, and they have so many questions, and they just would love to be able to talk. It's good to have a timer, too, especially if you got a pretty big attendance. You know, some people not to go over it. Thank you so much. So those are like the basics, what I do when I put on a workshop. I like to hit as many aspects of the tools that you can never, you know, trying to pick a theme, you could never go wrong with a tool. Teaching reading and writing, prayer and meditation, just the basics and sponsorship. Also the inventory. That's another one that's a great theme to pick. Service, and you'll hear about that today, is a wonderful theme to pick. And also you can combine them. You know, it's sort of hard to do a whole 3 hours on just service, but combining it. And I could never do this enough, get people involved as best they can. And also with service, that's an interesting one. I don't know how you guys are in your areas, but and how is funny, tends to be sort of a lot of women, and we're nice with each other. It's not like an AA meeting where it's, you know, a lot of males, and they're sort of heavy-handed with each other. But I know in how I've seen in my meetings, we tend to coddle the newcomer a little bit, and I like to see, and I like to get my sponsees involved. Come early, help set up the chairs, meet people, be a greeter. You could do that without abstinence. And also stay after and clean up. You get to meet people and participate. It's definitely ways people can get involved. They don't need an abstinence requirement. And also they should learn to do what I learned in my early days was what's called the ABCs of 12-step. And now in the old days, I know it's not politically correct, but it was ashtray, brooms, and chairs. Now you can call it whatever you want. But it's basically doing the humble setup and cleanup. And I'm not too good to pick up paper cups. 20 years doesn't make it doesn't excuse me from anything. And if anything, what I've learned over the 20 years is to be humbler, you know, to be really the one who cleans up and picks up and sweeps and washes out coffee pots, keeps me in my place, never to let this beautiful gift go to my head. If you ever read the end of the 12th tradition, it's like a prayer that I should never forget the miracle that was given to me, so long as I agree and obey. And that's where I'm at about this. And yeah, I love to clean up. I'm definitely a gopher type person. You know, I love to do the setup and the cleanup and to do the to be a leader. I'll do it. I enjoy it. But I'm really more the gopher type person and like doing that kind of stuff. So anyway, this is what one does to set up a workshop. Workshops can, like I said, can raise money to help fund delegates to go to conference, which is especially from around the country. You know, I'm in Area 1 over here on the West Coast, and we have 44 delegates that are allotted to us. That's a lot. That's almost two-thirds of the conference. And we need to hear from the rest of the country and the rest of the world. We need to have delegates be funded and come in from all over because they're representing you. And we want to hear your voice and see your faces. Also, with the conference coming up 6 months from now, start saving, you guys. I'd love to see everybody there in this last conference. It's the miracles that abound to see sponsors and sponsees meet for the first time, literally from across a crowded room, you know, wearing the red rose on their lapel, meeting each other. You saw a sponsor from Hawaii and a sponsee from, you know, like Nevada, and it was miracle to see that occur, people coming in from other parts of the world. It truly is an event not to miss, if at all possible, to get to it. And that's where the funding is so important. So if you can put this on, and also face-to-face, get on the same page with each other, or voice-to-voice with these workshops on the phone, get on the same page so we can carry this message of CEA as clearly as we can. And also, what we would like to teach with the sponsorship is how is not punishing. I really remiss in my area. You hear people say, I don't want to join that program. It's the Nazi program. They're so strict. We're not. Nazis were terrible, you know, murderers. We are life-giving, life-saving program. Yes, we are strict. And but that's what saves my life is the disciplined, structured approach. And I know I've done workshops on slipping, that slipping is not a punitive thing. It could be a great learning event. So with that, I'm sure I'm pretty close to my 5 minutes are up. And I am going to turn this over. We're going to our panel. And like I said, I'm going to have to get off the phone at 11:30 on the spot. I have company coming, but people are invited to call me, and I can get, I'm sure, Leona's number, and she's really great at getting locations and giving anyone assistance on that, on how to get a location and a flyer and a date and themes and like that. She's just awesome at that. I mean, just the champion of all times. So with that, I am going to turn this over to our sponsorship panel. Okay? So if they will all, you can get unmuted here, and I'm gonna start off. And first of all, for myself, it says Lois will start with a general overview of sponsoring. And sponsors, please have your sponsees sponsor. That's the first thing I've heard. My sponsees, and like almost all sponsees, are a little nervous when they first step up. They're like, oh gosh, can I do this? And I always tell them, let the spirit move you. You'll know when you're ready. It will just come on you. And when I give them that permission to just relax, you don't have to jump yet. And so when you stand up and qualify, you could still say you're not available quite yet if you're brand spanking new. But the day will come where all of a sudden, and usually it only takes like a week later, they'll say, yeah, I'm available. And I assure them they have me as a reference. I am sponsored, so they have my sponsor as a reference, and she is sponsored, and so on and so on. Please make sure your sponsor is sponsored so we can keep this chain going. That's always a big thing. And the main overview I can give is read the sponsor's guideline blue book. I swear everything's in there that you need just about. And especially a lot of people don't know about reading the introduction. You know, the first page on number one says congratulations. It gives a table of contents. And then page two is an introduction. And then page three and four goes into guidelines. And away you go. So please read this book. It is just filled with the basics of CEA. How, you know, I would get questions like, how much time do you need to have to speak at a workshop or a retreat? And it's in here. Believe it or not, it's all in here. It will tell you how much time you need. And, you know, it even says here to be a, on page four, to be a leader or a speaker and to read the tools, you need 30 days of HOW absence and have done the third step ceremony. So make sure they've stepped up. It's all explicit right here. To be a speaker at a workshop, you need at least 6 months. And, you know, for conventions and retreats, you need a year of HOW abstinence. So it's all in this book. Please read it. It's right there. And that's what that's the basics. You know, if you read that, you go on from there. So with that, my overview, I'm going to turn this over to Mary first. Okay? Mary. Are we unmuted so Mary can jump aboard?
Yeah, everybody will need to hit star six because I did a mass mute. This is Shannon.
Hi, this is Mary. I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi, Mary.
Hi. Thank you, Shannon. What I wanted to say regarding sponsorship and literature, and when I talk about this, I think I want to bring a specific instance that I had when I was sponsoring not too long ago. And that is, Lois is so right. In the sponsorship book, the big, I think of it as the big blue book, a light blue covered book that we have on sponsorship has a lot in it. The other thing I sometimes ask sponsees to do, because I think this is what happens when the newcomer comes in, the gray book, the Forever Abstinent book, has the food plan in it. And if you're like me, you came in and the first thing you did was you turned to the pages that have the food plan and look to see how much you can get of what. And then that little gray book tends to have a lot of information in it that people tend to skip over because they went to see, you know, what they were going to eat. And so I will often encourage people to go back and reread the gray book after they've been doing the food plan for a little while. I know that one thing that it said in that Forever Abstinent book was that we abstain from sugar, flour, and quantity. And that was something to me that was unique or fairly laid out in See How. That was something that I certainly needed to work on. And there's just a lot of little gems in that Forever Abstinent book that people tend to miss. And so sometimes if people are struggling, I have them go back over the Forever Abstinent book. The other thing I've had people do with regard to literature is, I remember I had a sponsee that slipped once, and I've also had it, well, I've had other sponsees slip too, but I've also seen where sponsees are struggling, and they're starting not to go to as many meetings, and I can see the slip coming. And if I know that the person is sincere but is struggling with their powerlessness, what I will frequently, not frequently, but I've done, and I know it's people have been very grateful later when we talked about it, is to actually meet with them if I can. If you're sponsoring by phone bridge, I would set up another time other than the normal time that you talk with them in the morning. Because I know, like everyone, I have a pretty structured time limit on the morning phone calls. but I will crack open the big book with them and especially go through the doctor's opinion, because a lot of what's in the doctor's opinion is step one. And recently I've been in a big book study that's been starting across several fellowships, so there's lots of different people in attendance. But one of the things that we've been doing is taking the statements about emotional balance or like physical craving, and if it's suggested as a statement in the doctor's opinion, what I will do is say, do I believe that my body is as abnormal as my mind with regard to compulsive eating? And so that's a way that if you've got someone that's struggling and you have some time where you can actually sit down with them and crack open a couple pages in the book and start to change some of the wording so that the sponsee brings their experience. Now, a lot of that's done in our See How questions, but sometimes I find that that needs repeating. And to go through, like, the doctor's opinion, go through step one in the 12 and 12 if need be, go through Bill's story and try to find where I can actually show the sponsee how alike their story is to this very severe alcoholic whose life was nearly destroyed. And then at that point, I also share my experience with, okay, here's what happened to me. Here's what's going on in the doctor's opinion. This is what happened to me when I could not accept my powerlessness. And I think sometimes if you have the blessing of being in the same town with your sponsee, there's a lot of healing and recovery that can come by just going to coffee together or tea, whatever, and sitting down and going over a couple of pages across a kitchen table at, you know, a coffee place or something. A lot of, I think, magic with sponsees happens when you go over the literature with them. And that's really, really helpful. And those early pages in the big book, before you ever get to There Is a Solution, are very powerful for helping sponsees and myself, I know, get through. That really, really, really has helped me to go back over the first early chapters, the prefaces, the doctor's opinion, in order to, as I've been told, watch that first step. And that's just been really, really good for me. So that's my little plug for the literature. And the other one that I think, other piece of literature that I think is really helpful for sponsees that not everyone digs out and gets to look at is we have a wonderful pamphlet in See How called Weighing and Measuring from a Food Plan. And, I don't see it get often read in meetings. And I remember when I first read it, and it was a little bit irritating to me, to say the least, that literature was pretty specific about what happens with us as See Howers when we have to weigh and measure from a food plan. And I highly encourage you, if your sponsees are struggling, and especially if they're struggling with measuring cups, to break out that pamphlet and write a little bit on that. It's a wonderful piece of See How literature for the thing that we have to do that's a little bit different than those who are in programs where you completely put down the substance. We've got to surrender to a measuring cup. And ultimately that leads us, you know, to our higher power and a better way of life. So the other thing I've been aware of through the literature, the piece of See How that asks us to do these things like weigh and measure, it helps. Someone needs to mute, I think. It helps us to differentiate between eating in an abstinent way and using. If I don't want to use my drug, okay, then I get to put my food in a measuring cup and use measuring cup. And that's just a little place of where I've been recently with the literature. So thanks for letting me share.
Thank you. Thank you, Mary. And now we're going to hear from Jim. Okay, Jim, are you there? Jim, are you there? Hello, hello. I was going to say, hello, Colorado. Jim, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yep, now I can. Hi.
Okay, good.
You're
well,
on.
You. All righty, I appreciate the chance to be here now that I'm actually on the call. You know, when we were talking about doing this workshop in our committee, and we went through the various little topics that we thought would be appropriate to hit today, boundaries was the one that stuck out to me. And it's really, for me, a big piece. It's an extension of the principles of the program, which
boundaries.
Is that we do this together, and it's not me and my sponsee, or me and my sponsor. It's the collective program that achieves recovery. So it's a key piece. One of my first sponsors gave me a really valuable piece of information, which was, he said, when somebody asks you to sponsor you, you need to ask them why they want you to sponsor them. And he said, there's an answer to that question. He said, and it really boils down to this, is that they want something you have. And it's important for me because what that does is that it sets the stage, or sets the table, so to speak, for me to share what I do. And that's really the whole breadth of what I have to offer as a sponsor to any sponsee is, look, I can tell you what I've done to get to today. Anything outside of what I do is just my opinion, and it's just my ego, or whatever you want to call it, and it really doesn't have any place in the program. So kind of establishing that piece up front is important because then I'm free. We basically now have a contract where I can say, look, here is what I do. And we begin setting these boundaries, which entail, first of all, looking at the concept and the tools. And I say, all right, let's read through this together. What are the requirements of this program? What are we agreeing to do here? And as we go through the meeting requirements and the phone calls and the weighing and measuring, it's important sometimes to have my sponsee write it down. Something happens when they take it and they write it down. It's, again, it's sort of the contract that we're making together to work on this recovery together. And then I, you know, invariably the questions come up, and I say, well, look, let's also make sure everybody has the literature that Lois and everyone's been talking about to this point is a key piece, because the literature is our program. It's written down for us. It's in black and white. And my sponsees will vouch that frequently when questions come up, I'll say, well, what does the literature say? You know, have you read the food plan? Have you read the sponsor's guidelines? Have you read the big book or the 12 and 12? And this, again, it helps me keep my place in this equation, this sponsor-sponsee relationship, which is I'm really here to facilitate my experience in terms of what I've been able to see happen in the program and the application of the steps and the things that we do. Nothing more. I'm not here to shape your life. I'm not here to create what I think is appropriate for you, because this is an all-volunteer experience, and it's, you know, ultimately your relationship with your higher power that determines that. So in the sponsor's guidelines and the introduction, there's a great little page 3 that kind of breaks down sort of what you're supposed to do as a sponsor. And, you know, do not give advice is like the first thing they say, which, gosh, I've made the human error, and I've given advice, and I've paid for that on occasion. by offering my thoughts. And, you know, I'm not excluded from doing that. And oftentimes I will have a thought or opinion which is outside of what the literature or the program might tell us to do, but I'll always qualify it and say, you know, well, this is my opinion. If you want my opinion, I'll share my opinion, but it's just that, and take it for what it is. But I can tell you how I've stayed abstinent today using the program of Compulsive Eaters Anonymous. How I can't tell you how to rewrite your mortgage or save your relationship or manage your finances or any of these things. You know, that's not my purpose on the planet today. If I keep myself right-sized by remembering what my purpose is and what my function is, it greatly informs, I think, how our phone calls go and what my relationship ends up being with my sponsees. The one area that always seems to be a little tricky is phone calls. The arranged time that we set aside, both of us, the two-way commitment that's made that I make with my sponsees to agree to speak with one another. And for me, it's in the mornings because that's the only time I can allocate that I know I'll be able to be available. But in the past, I'll get sponsees, and I'm sure other people have had this experience who they call 2 minutes late or 5 minutes late or 10 minutes late, and maybe they miss a day here and there. And we have guidelines in the program, in the book, that talk about if you miss 3 days in a row without prior commitment, that you basically may drop that person and have them find another sponsee or sponsor. But I kind of use a rough 5 minute rule. I say, look, we're all busy. Everybody's busy. I'm busy. You're busy. We're arranging this time to discuss things. If you could call me within 5 minutes of that time, then that's great. Cause then I know that you're committed to doing it. And I keep the time available to you. So when you call, I'm there ready to do my part. And it's a pretty good guideline I've found over the years. It's not too harsh, not too lenient, and it sort of, reminds both of us that, yeah, we've both made a commitment, and we both kind of have a piece of it to fulfill here. But invariably you'll get somebody who kind of tests those waters, and, that's a way that I kind of try to draw that line and say, look, if you're serious and you want this, I'll do whatever I can to share my recovery with you. But you have to show it. You have to express it in a way that we both can see. And that means just call me when you say you're going to call me. Aside from the sort of mechanical issues that I've just sort of, talked about in terms of when you call. The other big thing in terms of boundaries is with food. I am not the food police as a sponsor. What I always do, and we have the greatest disclaimer on the planet, which is when in doubt, leave it out. So when a creative food option is presented to me by a sponsee, and I don't have a direct way to answer the question by looking at the food plan and by perhaps talking to my sponsor or somebody else, I'll say, look, perhaps that is a food we should hold off on until maybe we get a better or a clear idea of how that works. It's ultimately their responsibility. It's not my responsibility to tell them, you can't eat that, or yes, I'd say, literature says, and this, again, is sort of a boundary. I'm not their mom or dad or grandfather or policeman or teacher. I'm just, another compulsive eater. That's all I am. That's my qualification for being in the program, is I'm a compulsive eater just like everybody else. And then I have less of a tendency to get sucked into the sort of endless permutations that can occur in a compulsive eater who may not quite be ready to put down the food and who's really looking for the angles on how they can twist or slice and dice what it says in the food plan or not says does not say in the food plan to sort of grab control of food again. And, you know, and I'm not the arbiter of that. You know, the literature is pretty clear on it. And my fail-safe is when in doubt, leave it out. And then the last thing I'll say in regard to boundaries is it's a God deal, you know. This is a higher power-driven program. And I always insist on including whatever the person thinks about their higher power might be in the equation. It's not my relationship with my sponsee that keeps them abstinent. It's their relationship with their higher power, whatever form that is. That takes the responsibility off me. It's not my obligation or responsibility to keep anybody abstinent. And that's an important thing. It makes me much more, I think, valuable and useful as a tool for someone else's recovery if I'm not, you know, an authority figure, if I'm not a judge or jury, but if I'm simply another compulsive eater sharing my program and recovery. And I think that's about what I need to say for right now. We can answer questions at the end. Thanks.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you so much. That was amazing. Okay, our next speaker, next panelist is Roberta. Roberta, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hi, you're on. Good luck.
Hi, everybody. Sorry, I was expecting another person, so I'm glad to be here. Thank you for asking me to speak today. Let me just qualify again. I'm Roberta, compulsive eater. My date of abstinence is January 31st, 2007. I'm maintaining a 70-pound weight loss. I sponsor on all levels. I am available for outreach. I'm just glad to be here today. What I wanted to talk about was remembering. As a sponsor, I find myself often reminding my sponsees about things that they've forgotten. And that made me think, well, Roberta, what is it that you spend most of your time saying? What are you saying to your sponsees? So I kind of made a top 10 list of at least my perception of what I think I say all the time to my sponsees. You'll have to ask my individual sponsees if that this is what they hear, but from my perspective, this is what I think I say. And I'll start kind of in the convention of top 10 lists. I'll start at the end and then work back to the beginning. So number 10 on my list of the things I tend to say a lot is nothing. At least that's my hope. My hope is that I really am just there to listen to the sponsees. I am not responsible for my sponsees' abstinence. I am not responsible for their life. I am simply a witness to their recovery. So often the best thing that I can do is just to listen. At least I try very hard to. Number 9 about the things I tend to say to sponsees is that I gladly take that off your shoulders and give it to God. So when they're sharing things in their inventory or just things about their life today that are very difficult, at the end of when they're sharing, I actually do say, I gladly take that off your shoulders and I give it to God. And my hope is that I promptly forget it because I don't need to carry around other people's issues. My shoulders aren't big enough, let alone their shoulders not being big enough. But I do take it off them and just say, you have a clean sheet of paper. It's all in God's hands now. You can let it go. Number 8 on my list of things to do, I often find myself saying, well, you have the freedom to feel that way, or you have the freedom to do that, or you have the freedom to not do that. Often I find people sharing, I'm so worried about this, and I feel this way, and I know I shouldn't. And I often say, you know what, I give you the freedom to feel that way. Just to try to let them know that it's okay. Acceptance is the answer to all my needs today, just like it says in the big book. Number 7, this is a big thing I often try to remind my sponsees, and that is, what are you doing today that's fun for you? Yeah. I know for me in my own recovery, I spend an awful lot of time I'm a chronic overachiever. What must I do? Okay, I must do this and this. You got to do it. And even when I've done all that and achieved my goal, I still say, not good enough, you should do more. It's really hard for me to relax. And so I try to say to myself, I try to say to my sponsees, what are you doing that's fun for you today? Because I'll tell you, if I don't do something that's fun, the little kid inside of me is going to get really resentful for having to work all the time, and she's going to be saying, there's no way I'm following this food plan. And so I need to let that little kid and the adult in me go, you know what, you've done enough, just rest. So it's a real pleasure to remind my sponsees, you know, what are you doing that's fun for you? And find something that you like to do. You are worth doing something fun for. You are valuable. Number six, this is something I say all the time, and that is, I hear you. I hear you. When a sponsee is talking about something, I often find they just need to be heard. And so I just want to say, I hear you. Number five on my list is, I validate you. If I was in your situation dealing with the things that you're dealing with and faced with what you're faced with, I would feel the exact same way. Your feelings and thoughts and actions are totally valid. So I often say, I validate you. Number four, I accept you. I accept you exactly as you are. I find a lot for me, a lot of the things that I find myself doing, I'm doing just because I want to be accepted and loved. And just to know that someone accepts me is a wonderful quality. And I do my best to give that to my sponsees. Number three, now these are top three things I say. I often ask a lot of questions of my sponsees. They will be talking about something that they really want or they're trying to get. And I will ask, what is it that gives you? And sometimes the answer is fairly superficial. Well, I want just such and such. And I say, okay, if you have that, what does that give you? How is your life different as a result of getting that than from the time before you had it? And they'll say, and usually it comes back to, well, I guess I get maybe satisfaction. Okay, well, and I ask, why do you need that? Well, because I feel anxious. Okay, why do you feel anxious? Because I feel like I'm not good enough. Okay, so if you feel like you're not good enough, if you did feel good enough, what would that give you? Like, I guess that would make me feel like I deserve to be here. Okay, and then I say, well, what if you really did deserve to be here? What would happen then? Oh, man, I could be at peace. And then we start talking about that. So I often try to find the underlying issue of why we do the things that we do. Number two, and this is something I say all the time, so much so that my sponsees are now, when I say, what do you think I'm going to say next? They say, oh, I know what you're going to say. You're going to say, where is God in all this? Because this is a spiritual program of recovery. And I believe that everything we do in this program, whether it's a workshop or whether it's a meeting or a phone call, all of these are opportunities for me to connect with my higher power. And he's really who I want. Often I may think it's the food. If you ask me, Roberta, what do you want right now? It's the food. I want that food. It's not really the food. It's really God. I want God to help me, to accept me, to love me, to take this project that I'm working on at work that I don't know how to do and I'm afraid I'm going to fail. Please, God, don't let me fail. Well, I'll tell you, that food in the refrigerator that's calling my name, that food item for sure is not going to be able to finish my project at work. But God is, because his shoulders are big enough. So often with my sponsees, I remind them, where is God in all this? And I'll be honest with you, more often than not, my sponsee will say, oh, man, I forgot. And I say that myself. Oh, my gosh, I forgot there's a God. That's right. That's who I want. And the number one list of things that I find myself, or at least trying to say to sponsees, is good job. You're doing great. You're doing fantastic. I give you an A+. The opportunities I have to share with my sponsees mercy and grace and forgiveness and love, not just for me, but to say your higher power made you, and your higher power loves you, and your higher power is on your side, and I'm on your side, I'm on your cheering squad. All of those things, all those top 10 things are what I do to help a sponsee remember that they are valuable, that they are loved, and that they are worth it. Somebody I really respect in program had a slip recently and had shared that right after the slip, the voice came back and said, well, you may as well have this food item now because after all, it doesn't count. And my friend said to that voice, whether or not the food counts is irrelevant. I count. Mm-hmm. And when I heard that, I thought, that is such the right message. I count. And every person that's listening here, you guys count. You are so valuable. And that's what we have a chance to give away in this program. So remembering that, and I forget that all the time. My favorite story about this is that I shared a voicemail for a friend in program, and I had said something about God saying, man, your higher power loves you, he's there. And I left that message, and then I went on my day. And a day or two later, that person called me back. And when they called me back, I was in the middle of something really difficult. And when the person called me back, he left me a message saying, Roberta, thanks so much for that message reminding me that God's there and God's on my side and God's going to take this on his shoulders. And I went, oh, yeah, there's a God who loves me. I forgot. So as one of my other friends said, you know, one day I'll save your life and the next day you'll save mine. And with that, I appreciate you letting me share, and I pass.
Oh, my God. That was amazing. Oh, you guys are just the bomb. I can't believe it. This has just been an incredible workshop. And now we're going to have Shannon talk about spirituality. I know this is being recorded.
Lois?
We've got to listen to this thing. Shannon, are you there, my dear?
I am. I'm Shannon. I'm a compulsive eater. And first of all, I want to say thank you, Lois, for leading our workshop today. And I want to, you know, acknowledge the other panelists for just giving outstanding presentations.
Unbelievable. Okay.
Yeah.
That's great. Okay, ma'am. Here you go.
Okay. Now, before I start, I want to let you know that I do have a contact sheet available for all of the panelists if you would like to contact us after the workshop. And we're going to do it this way rather than spend our time giving out phone numbers. So here's what you do to get that list. You email me at get a pen. Okay, here's my email address. It's shannonmhammer@aol.com. That's S as in Sam, H as in Harry, A, N as in Nancy, N as in Nancy, two N's, O, N as in Nancy, and then M as in Marie, and then Hammer, like the tool, hammer@aol.com. So if you email me, just put in the subject line, Sponsorship Contact Committee, and I'll be happy to email you a list of all of our numbers so that you can get a hold of us after this workshop. Just to qualify, I've been in program since the late 80s, but I've been abstinent since January 13th, 2003. So I just had the great honor of celebrating my seven-year abstinence birthday. I am a food inventory step and maintenance sponsor. I'm maintaining over 100-pound weight loss, and everything that's good in my life today I owe to this program. And what I wanted to talk about today is we've already had such great topics covered, but I really wanted to talk about how we can teach our sponsees spirituality. And the reason that I wanted to talk about this is that, you know, we come to this program with all different types of spirituality. Some of us are agnostic. Some of us are atheists. Some of us, you know, grew up Catholic, we're Jewish, you know, and we're all welcome here. The 12-step community is an all-inclusive party. Everybody is welcome. And in our meetings, we sit next to nuns and priests and atheists and Buddhists, and everybody is welcome. And the beauty of it truly is that everybody can recover. It doesn't matter where we come from spiritually. So how I kind of introduce the topic of spirituality, just keeping in mind that we all come to this party with different experiences, vantage points, and religious backgrounds, is I just start easy, very easy. And we're very fortunate that the first 30 days.
You have time to lay with him for a minute and reading books.
Hey, everybody, can we hit *6? Okay. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do a mass mute. And then I'm going to hit *6 again. So hang on one second. Just a second. Okay, so hopefully that took care of the issue. The recording assured me that you can unmute yourself by hitting *6. So I think we're in good shape. So what I do with my sponsees is I just start them in easy, ease them into creating a new spiritual experience, because that's basically what we're doing. You know, we are creating a new relationship with our spirituality, and that doesn't mean that if we are an atheist, we have to believe in God. We don't. This program can work, you know, for everybody. And we're fortunate that the first 30-day question takes us through the first three steps. And when we get to that second step, you know, we get to do a list of everything that, you know, all of our experiences with God. And then we get to create a new list, you know, a new relationship with God, with what do we need God to be, or what do we need our higher power to be, is really what I should be saying. And basically, I just give them instructions to create some quiet time. Create some quiet time in the morning. And I learned this from a sponsor that I had. The big book talks about that God does not make too hard of terms for those who earnestly seek. And my sponsor said, so what does that mean, to earnestly seek? How do we know when we're earnestly seeking? And the way that we earnestly seek is that we carve out consistent time every day to spend with our higher powers. That is how we earnestly seek. It's kind of like going to the gym. You know, we can go to the gym, like kind of drop in whenever, and that's good, and we'll get some benefits, but we really don't see the true benefits until we start hitting the gym regularly and doing the work. My sponsor today says meditation is manual labor. You got to suit up and you got to show up. There's no shortcuts to spirituality. And that's basically what I do, and I keep it very, very simple for them. And I don't wait until we get to the 11th step. I start them out right away with, okay, tell me what your morning is like. Okay, so you have 2 minutes. Here's what I would like for you to do is, you know, read something that is meaningful to you, that's spiritually based, whatever that is for you. Could be the program literature, could be the big book, could be the Bible, just something that is going to get you in touch with your higher power, whatever that is, and then set a timer and sit quietly for 1 minute. And that is how we start out. And, you know, and 1 minute turns into two, which turns into five, which turns into 10. And then the next thing you know, we're off and running spiritually. But, you know, basically I feel my job as a sponsor is to introduce a new relationship with somebody's higher power that is not my relationship with my higher power. It's to pave the way for them to have a relationship. And I love what was said here today. Like, sponsoring is not about me. I am an instrument to help people find their own paths, and that's my job. And I love what Roberta said, you know, about asking them, where is God in all this? And I will introduce the concept of God, you know, into our conversations, you know, as appropriate. But I'm very, very gentle with it because I want people to have their own experiences. And I'm very clear that this isn't a religious program. It's a spiritual one. So that is my approach to it. I introduce them gently. I stick closely to the program. And I allow them to have their own experience with it. So thank you very much for letting me share. And with that, I turn the workshop back over to Lois. Now, Lois, remember that you need to hit star six because I did a mass mute.
And I just did. Shannon, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you so much. Oh, my God, this has just been astonishing. Okay, now this is the time for questions and answers. And we'll ask participants to unmute and ask their questions of the panelists, you know, dress them, and so they know which ones, you know, you're asking the question of. Also, like I said, no abstinence requirement. This is a workshop, not a meeting. So, okay, it's open.
Hi, this is Mary. Can you hear me?
Hi, Mary.
Hi, can I just ask Roberta, would you mind just going down through your 10 list again, just from 1 to 10, just real quickly?
Hi, it's Roberta. I'm assuming you can hear me.
Yeah, thanks,
yeah.
Roberta.
Sure, and let me ask Shannon and Lois, is that okay, or would you want to put this in the note, Shannon, that you emailed
to
everyone?
Go for it. She asked. No, I'm sure we all want to know. I got pin poised.
Number 10 is nothing. Again, I try very hard to listen. Number 9, I gladly take that off your shoulders and give it to God. Number 8, you have the freedom to blank, whatever they say. 7, what are you doing today that's fun for you? 6, I hear you. 5, I validate you.
Slow down a little bit. Okay, I hear you. Okay, and then next, so 5,
Lois,
validate.
Lois, I hear you, Lois. 5 is I validate you. 4 is I accept you. 3 is what is it that blank gives you? What is it that blank gives you? 2 is where is God in all this? And number 1, Good job, exclamation point. You're doing great.
Great.
Thanks for asking.
Question person, is that everything you needed?
Yes, thank you very much, Roberta.
Do you have a question you'd like to ask? Or?
No, I wanted to get that because I have a sponsorship workshop in San Diego and I'd bring that workshop, so thanks.
Thank you.
Lois, I have a question for Shannon. This is DK, Grateful Compulsive Eater. Can you hear me okay?
I can.
I just wondered if Shannon, could you talk about easing your sponsees into spirituality? So you talked about the beginning, the 2 minutes. How do you increase spirituality and the connection as they go along? What do you encourage?
Let me do another mass mute, and then I'll hit star six, and then, there's no more music? Oh, maybe I don't have to do that.
There we go. Okay.
I think we're in good shape. Yeah, but you know what, that's an excellent question. And, you know, what I do basically is I start them out with 1 minute, and then I check in with them periodically, let's say, you know, maybe once a month or so. If, first of all, are you doing it? Okay, and if they're not doing it, then we kind of stick to the 1 minute, because that's, but for me, that's the basic foundation, is we need to put the time in every morning for that quiet time with our higher powers. So if they're not doing it, then we need to get back on track. And then when they've been doing it for a while, I'll just check in with them and say, okay, well, let's bump it up to 5, you know, and then, okay, so let's bump it up to 10. And if they don't have the time in the morning, then we start talking about what else they can do to start, connecting with their higher power during the day. It's all very individual. Like, I don't have 20 minutes in the morning to meditate or 20 minutes at night. So sometimes we'll talk about how they can do like a 30-second meditation at their desk, just, you know, when they're agitated or afraid, you know, closing their eyes and, you know, taking a deep breath. So I work with them with their individual needs and their individual schedules, but I always start them out with a 1 minute in the morning, and then I just individualize it from there. So hopefully that answered your question.
Thank you.
Okay, anyone else? That's fantastic. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay, great. Another question, please. Shannon, do you need to unmute everybody?
No, I didn't mute them, actually.
Oh, great, great. Yeah, the music just went off. Okay, come on. This is your workshop. That question right there that's on, you think might be silly, but
Rebecca?
We're all thinking it. Hi, who's this?
This is Rebecca from Brighton, Colorado, and I have a question regarding asking guest speakers to come and speak. What do people usually charge for that?
This is Lois, Compulsive Eater. Hi. I personally would never take money. To me, this is, it's my gift. I could never repay. No, I don't. And then even when I've been offered gas money or whatever, I personally don't. I don't know if there's a rule about this. There's nothing in the bylaws that I know of, but I would never take money for doing 12-step work. This is supposed to be non-professional. I mean, I suppose, if someone needed them, I don't know. That's sort of an individual thing and probably autonomy, but I would hope a person would want to get, quote-unquote, paid for it, but maybe, you know, with expenses, if they're coming, like, a long distance or something. Ooh, gee, because I did one up in Idaho, and gosh, did I pay for my own ticket? I don't remember, but I think I did. You know, I wouldn't want it. Personally, I wouldn't take money. That's just my feelings about it. What does other panelists think? Or even participants in your experience, strength, and hope and knowledge about this? And also, if anyone has 12, like AA experience, and you can throw some light on this. Great question, by the way.
Hi, this is Terry. I'm calling from Muskegon, Michigan.
Hey, hi.
Hi, everyone. Wonderful workshop. We do not accept money for the service that we give to see how, and that's underneath one of the traditions that talks about professionalism. And I don't have my 12 and 12 in front of me, But I'm sure that you would find this topic in there, that we don't charge for the 12-step work we do. We give freely of what we've been given freely. That's all I have.
Hi, right Mary. On.
Hi, Mary.
Hi, this is Mary, compulsive eater. We've had a couple takes on this, but I think a lot depends on the person that you ask to lead and the distance they have to go. Some people who you've asked to lead a workshop have the resources to get there and back with no issue at all. Other people aren't going to have the money for a plane ticket. And some people have some money, but not all the money. So I think as long as the person's not being paid for the workshop directly, I have seen it go where the cost of the plane ticket has been given to that person, or I've seen maybe the person has decided to pay half of the ticket, or, you know, and not anything, maybe, and then the inner group or whoever's sponsoring the workshop pays the other half. As long as they're not being reimbursed for the for speaking directly, I've often seen leaders be reimbursed for expenses depending on what gets worked out with the group that's asking and the person who's speaking. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. And just as like for conference, we do, you know, fund delegates to get there. That might be a guideline or a thumbnail guideline to go by. But thank you so much. And just so people would know with these questions, they can call any of us, you know, and around the country for the Experience, Strength, and Hope and get these questions answered. Another question?
Hi, my name is Marsha. I'm a compulsive overeater. I have a question for anybody that can help me. I received a call this morning from one of my sponsees, and she said to me very candidly, she said, I don't want to do this anymore. And this is somebody that had many years of abstinence, and she went out. She picked up, I should say. And I didn't know. I know it's between her and her God on how to stay abstinent and to be willing, because that's how most of us do it. But I didn't know what to say to her. I didn't know what and how to deal with it. I did the best I could, but how do you help somebody? I mean, what do you do?
Marcia, it's Roberta. Can I try? Can I jump in and say what I would say?
Please.
Again, I'm Roberta, compulsive eater. I would say, first off, you have the total freedom to do whatever you want, and I totally support you. But before you go, can I ask you a couple questions? What is it that you want to happen? Well, I want to eat. Okay, well, why? What would that give you? Well, I don't want to have to weigh and measure, and it's a lot of time to prep these vegetables, whatever the answer is. And I would say, I would really just say, and that's fine. There's no right or wrong answer. I'm just curious, what is it that you want? And almost every time I've had that conversation with sponsees, they have come back and they've really said, you know what? The truth is, I just don't want to be a compulsive eater. And I always say, you know what? Boy, I identify with that. But what I found is that's not my option. It's not a case of, do I want to be a compulsive eater or not? The issue is, I'm a compulsive eater. What am I going to do about it? Am I going to be in the disease, or am I going to be working tools so that I don't have to eat compulsively? And usually they're the ones that then say, you know, you're right. You know, you're right. I really, it's not that I want to leave. I just don't want to be a compulsive eater. Now, I have heard, I have done that with some sponsees. And one time a sponsee came back to me and said, you know, Roberta, I really don't want to work this program, but I think you kept me here longer than I would have been on my own because you helped me really see the underlying issues about what I really wanted. So again, there's no guarantee they're going to stay. They're going to do what they want, and they have the freedom to do that. So that's my opinion.
Thank you. Anyone else? Another panelist or anyone out there has suggestions?
Yes, this is Cynthia from Tennessee. I was wondering if Shannon.
Hey, Cynthia.
Hello. I was wondering if Shannon could repeat her email address.
Yeah. Of course. It's Shannon. M. Hammer, S-H-A-N-N-O-N, M as in Marie, Hammer, H-A-M-M-E-R, at AOL.com.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Mary Compulsive Eater.
Hi, Mary. Hello.
Hi.
Mary?
Yeah, I just wanted to say my heart goes out. I just wanted to respond. I know I'm going back one question to Marcia, but my heart goes out to that person that you spoke with this morning, and I just have to say that I didn't really qualify, but I'm a food inventory step and maintenance sponsor, maintaining a 74-pound weight loss. Having said that, I was a chronic 20-year slipper. And when a person goes out at that point and says, I don't want to do this anymore, who is a real compulsive eater, if they're a real compulsive eater and not just somebody who occasionally picks up at a real food addict, when someone says that, in my experience, it's because there is a big red flag going on, and it's so much easier in our minds to think about eating than whatever the real issue is. Mm. And so what I will frequently do with a sponsee who says that is to at least ask them to go back, like I told you before, go back through the doctor's opinion and maybe go back to the chapter more about alcoholism and ask them if they're willing to do that. Especially in the chapter more about alcoholism, about the guy who keeps hitting himself, you know, jaywalking and getting hit by the bus, that whole thing. And use that and, you know, take a little time and say, are you willing to do this before you go out? And feel free to give that person my contact information. I'm happy to talk with anyone who's in that place because I know the blackness of that place. Mm-hmm. And the only other resource I would mention is there is going to be that slip workshop that's coming up at the end of March, I think, and I don't have the exact date of that, but there's someone here in Southern California who's been doing slip workshops, and I think that there's going to be a phone bridge workshop, and if that person's willing to go on to that. But that place is a really tough place to be in, where you feel like the shine is completely gone from the program, and what are you going to do? So I hope that's helpful. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hello, this is Tony, compulsive eater.
Hey, Tony.
Hi, you can hear me good. I have a question about, accountability. And I've been over 18 months in the program, about 20 months now, and I've had two different sponsors. And I happen to have had a real hard time slipping a lot during that first 18 months. And for some reason, it just wasn't clicking with those sponsors that I had. And a lot of it was there were some things that I was afraid to ask and ask about because I thought my sponsor was going to, you know, come down hard on me or something like that. And in particular, the one area for me was this idea of committing my food. I had like a don't ask, don't tell policy. I wouldn't if I didn't ask about it and they didn't tell me. And then I asked a couple of people, they said, well, it really varies from sponsor to sponsor what their requirements are in terms of committing your food and whether you're supposed to call them if you need to make a change beforehand. I mean, I've heard everything all over the map on it, on what you're supposed to do there. So I'm really kind of in limbo if there are any guidelines, and especially if I'm going to be sponsoring somebody, whether they should be actually, you know, sticking with what they committed in the morning. My thing is I would commit my food, quote unquote, right, and wouldn't really live up to it. I would always make a change. And what I would do is maybe I would tell my sponsor about it the next day. But it wasn't really, you know, something I was consistent with. And I never called beforehand. So I'm just not sure what we're supposed to do there, if someone could address that.
Okay. Well, would you like to feel that? Any thoughts?
This is Lois. I can't stand the silence. first of all, I just went to a wonderful workshop, and I think it's the same woman who's going to do it on slips or relapses. I hope so, and please partake in it. She's amazing. I've been in hers twice. Anyway, she's the first to have a sponsor that you trust, and even trust with slipping. And that's a good relationship, you know, to try to establish and find the right person for you so you can say anything. I heard from one of our people on the board, and the way she sponsors, and she was sponsored this way, she says, you know, we commit our food, we don't report it. And that's good. And, mainly it's that trust, so you can tell that person anything. And also, I think it's what Roberto is saying about really looking at yourself during the day, like when you, I know committing food, and especially in my early days, I would try to say the thing I thought my sponsor wanted to hear, and I didn't like, but I did eat what I committed, and I hated it, and then I finally started to feel more at ease, not at ease, trust my sponsor, that's a better word, trust my sponsor to discuss, to make my food not so monotonous, and, you know, we do have condiments listed that we're allowed to use, and she gladly taught me and showed me how to use them to make our food interesting, because we are compulsive eaters. To live on a diet is deadly. I couldn't stick around for 20 years with that diet mentality. It has to be delicious. I am a compulsive eater. It's my nature. And to be creative, and people will teach you. Now, I'm so out of the food now, thank you, God, to date. God knows what tomorrow's going to bring. But that's not too much of a problem for me at the moment. But really, to work as I'm working with new sponsees, I teach them how to make it good so they'll stay. I always say this isn't the Dachau diet. If you're going to commit a bag of carrots and a can of tuna, I'm going to come over and slap you. Because I'd want to hang myself if I had to eat something like that. So we get real about it and make it taste good. I don't know if that's helping you. You may just not be ready, but to have a sponsor who will stay with you until you are. And I know sometimes to get sponsored and get some, and finally be able to get abstinent is to build a trust. Would someone else like to jump in on their experience with this?
I'd like to. Thank you. This is Kailani, compulsive eater.
Oh, hi, Kailani.
Hi. Hi, and Tony, thanks for the question. You know, I look at this as, I'm a food inventory step sponsor. I'm down 45 pounds in CEA How. I look at this in a really simple way, which is that I follow the Forever Abstinent booklet. And the first tool is 3 meals daily, weighed and measured, with nothing in between, except sugar-free soda, non-calorie beverage, and sugar-free gum. And then it says food is written down, called in, and committed. And then on page 13 in Ready, Set, Go, it says every day write down your meal plan and discuss it with your sponsor before you eat anything. Include the foods you will eat and the amounts. Do not make any changes in that day's meal plan without consulting your sponsor. So that's what I do, and it works for me. And even if I'm changing my vegetables for some, I learned from a sponsor once, don't commit anything you don't have in the house for the next day, you know? Mm. And that means that, you know, it keeps me accountable with what I have in my cupboards, you know? And it was a great lesson for me. You know, I have to look at myself just like I would if I had a child. I need to make sure that that stuff's available. And if I do make a change, I always call it or text it in before. And then the rest is up, you know, between me and my sponsor. And I think part of the reason for committing, it's not about being good or bad or right or wrong. It's about surrendering, because I've learned I can't do it my way. It doesn't work. You know, I've gotten direction from a sponsor that I may not give to a sponsee, but I decided to surrender my food to that sponsor because I believe God brings us together, me and my sponsor. And so when I'm surrendering my food to my sponsor, I'm essentially surrendering to God, and I'm taking step one. So if the change happens, I do always call it in or text it. As a symbol of my willingness to surrender. And that's my experience with that.
Thank you, Kailani. Anyone else would like to chime in on that?
Yeah, go ahead, Jim.
Jim, yeah. You know, here this is kind of goes back to what I said when I sit down with a new sponsee, which is, we're going to go through and we talk about all these issues and we agree up front what we're going to do. You know, life happens. Sometimes schedules change, and unless I'm carrying all my food with me, the food I may have planned on eating may not be what is available to me at the mealtime. So if we agree up front, okay, what are we going to do? If there's a food change, what are we going to agree to? We're both going to agree to it, and then that's the protocol we follow. And it's just really about being open, not screwing around with food, making decisions on the fly, because that's just danger territory for this compulsive eater. And so it's really about communication. And I think the trust piece that's been talked about, you know, early on, it's like, look, we're adults. We're going to discuss this just in an adult manner. And, you know, if you want help with this, I will do whatever I can. And if that means we need to have an agreement up front about if there's a food change, how are we going to handle it? Then we do it like that. So that's all I had to offer. Thanks.
Thank you so much. Shannon, were you adding something to that?
Yeah, I just want to add, everything has been great, really great answers. And I think because I have that rule too, you know, like I request that my sponsees, you know, call in changes to their food. But I'm also very, very careful about the way that I frame it because I think Lois used the word punitive because, and also Jim said, you know, I'm not the food police. I'm not. And I don't want to have anybody, I don't want to be like the scary sponsor. But what I tell them, and this is what I completely believe, it's like, you know, what we want to do is we want to put a little bit of distance between, you know, our hand and our mouths. You know, when we've committed to something, we want to make sure that we follow what we've committed. And if there's a change, we want to just pause before changing. And what calling in a change does, it just creates a little bit of pause that keeps us one step ahead of the disease. Sometimes food changes are totally legitimate. You know, the food that you had in the refrigerator is spoiled. You didn't need to, you know, you can't eat it. You have to change it. It's not a problem. Other times it's just impulsive. I don't want to eat what I called in. And, you know, that is what we want to avoid. So that's how I frame it with my sponsees. I just make it very gently. It's like this just gives you, it allows you to stay one step ahead of the disease. And that seems to work really well. And I haven't experienced much rebellion because there's nothing to rebel against. We're just staying one step ahead of the disease. So hopefully that'll help.
Okay. Well, we're coming to the end here as far as the time goes. It's been 90 minutes and 11:30. If you haven't had a chance to ask your question, please avail yourself of the contact list and call any of us and all of us and do that. We'll stay in communication with each other. Of course, we have to make our 3 outreach calls anyway every day, so let's just all make sure we do that. And this is a great way, and we get to connect up all over the country and parts of the world. So anyway, ladies and gentlemen, I just can't thank you enough. This has just been one of the most incredible hour and a half I have the pleasure of participating in and just being a listener. Just want to thank everyone for allowing me to be part of this workshop and everyone who shared. I just want to thank you all. And if we could just have a little moment of quiet meditation and we'll pray our way out of here with the serenity prayer. Okay, God. Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Everybody, keep coming back. It works if you work it. So just bring lots of love, and please don't pick up. It's not worth it, and you're worth it. Okay, friends, have a great day, and thank you so, so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you for your service. Does anybody need the contact? My contact information?
I don't have a phone number. Could I have one phone number?
Do you have email?
No, I don't have a computer.
Okay. I'll give you my telephone number. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. What's your name?